Hey there, it's Colt Cabana. Thank you so much for checking out the past shows from the archives. All the past ones in this feed are ad-free. I took out all the ads. If this is something you like, you can listen to every single episode of the Art of Wrestling podcast dating back to 2010, absolutely ad-free for only $4 a month on my Patreon. That's patreon.com/Colt Cabana. All right, enjoy the show.
This is the Art of Wrestling with professional wrestler Colt Cabana.
All right, how you guys doing? Come on in, sit down, relax. You're about to listen to the Art of Wrestling, a professional wrestling podcast. It's a life podcast. It's a personal journal. It's an entryway into the minds, the souls, the hearts, and the lives of the people involved in the world of professional wrestling. I am your host. My name is Colt Cabana. I'm a commentator. I'm a skin peeler. Oh, God, I'm a United Airlines plane taker. Sorry, that's a true thing. Oh, man. Most importantly, though, I am a professional wrestler, and I am sitting here live in the studio apartment in Chicago, Illinois. Before we go any further, this is a fan-supported and listener-supported podcast supported by people just like you. We give it to you free charge every single Thursday. ColtCabana.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts from. A couple great ways that you could support: rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Tell a friend, tweet it out, Facebook it out. Best way to support, though, ColtMerch.com, DigitalColt.com, t-shirts, buttons, pictures, posters, DVDs, Wrestling Road Diaries 3, my documentary, Funny Equals Money, Micro Brawlers, Headbands. I ship it out all myself, ColtMerch.com, DigitalColt.com. Hey, some business up top. I'm having a free podcast on my birthday at Brick Brack Records in Logan Square right before the AAW show. Also, I don't know if Jeff Hardy is brought here for the first time. Wrestling Road Diaries 3 is my movie, and I'm so proud of it. Jack Ettinger killed it, and you should watch it or download it. And that's right, Jeff Hardy is my guest on the show this week, and I'm happy to have Jeff on. You'd have think when I've had all the wrestlers in the world on the show, who else could there be? Jeff Hardy, also Matt Hardy. Sadly, Matt was somebody we've been together working on trying to do, but then Matt became broken, and Matt was like, only broken Matt Hardy is showing up on these shows. I'm keeping it real, real. And for my show, it's getting down to the nitty-gritty, kind of telling that story from the very beginning. Almost a lot more, based on the independent work of when we're young, hungry, and stupid and trying to make it in the world of wrestling. So I don't know if broken Matt would work, but whenever Matt becomes unbroken, we'll try to get him on the show. I don't know if we can because Matt and Jeff, they redebuted on WrestleMania. They're back with the mothership. And kind of cool that Jeff did the show. This came from, I guess, Jeff being on a lot of indies these days, and not necessarily from Ring of Honor. This was from a WrestlePro show where we were in the back and we were talking, and then the idea kind of came up, and then here we were at WrestleMania weekend, Ring of Honor, in a hotel room. We did the podcast. Two nights later, he shows up doing another ladder match, and I commentated that ladder match he did with Young Bucks, and I also saw Matt at the hotel at like 5 o'clock, and I was like, nope. No way. And then they did. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know why they would agree to take on that match knowing that they were going to do that WrestleMania match. And they did. And they didn't take off. They went nuts, them with the Young Bucks. I'll tell you what, though. It kind of didn't surprise me. Because if I took anything away from this talk with Jeff Hardy in a hotel room, just us two hanging out, you know, he's always been documented about kind of being a free spirit, painting, motocross, the music. And I guess I just was never in a room with him talking about it. But as I did, I realized, oh, this guy is a different guy. He's a free spirit. He's an interesting soul. He is different. Probably why so many people liked him, and probably why it was hard for him to fit into this mold of this alpha male promotion that he's now back working for. I'd say he's not like you and I, but he might be like you. He's not like I. But I'm not one of these hard asses who says only people like I is. Why did I say I? I don't know. But, you know, people who aren't like me, I like everybody. Anybody who's decent, I like people who are decent. And this was a fun chat. He's a decent dude. In my eyes, from this talk, I think a lot of people's eyes too. And we'll get into it. We get into the Sting talk and all that stuff too. So we'll get into it. I think you'll really dig it. Thanks for coming along. If you're new, go listen to some old ones. They're up, all right? I think you'll dig my style of podcasting. I think. I don't know. Maybe it's not for some people. Usually what I'll talk about is my week, because I'm a traveling wrestling man. And I was in South Bend, Indiana this week, and I was in Baltimore, Maryland this week. I commentated for the ROH TV. A lot of people have liked my commentary for the last two big Ring of Honor shows. This time I do it for TV. I'd like to hear if from you guys as it comes out. Does it hold up? I felt more comfortable, I think, with the longer shows where I was able to get into it deeper. But we'll see how the television comes out. Is this what I'm going to do for the rest of my life with Ring of Honor? I don't know. They're very secretive. I'm going to be wrestling in Milwaukee, Minnesota in a couple weeks for Ring of Honor. I think I'm wrestling for them. I don't plan on not wrestling anytime soon. If I do commentary for Ring of Honor and then also just wrestle other places, I'd be happy with that. I'd be happy with wrestling there too. Basically, if I'm doing some wrestling stuff, I'm happy. I think that sums up the last 18 plus years. Afterwards, we went to Jimmy's Seafood and I tweeted something out and Chuck Taylor gave me shit for it. Deservedly so. I hate those ass-kissing ones that are kind of all the same, but listen, Jimmy's Seafood, it's ran by this dude, Johnny Crab Cakes on Twitter, and he just takes care of the wrestlers. It's this wonderful establishment. I'm not trying to make this a commercial, but the idea of whenever wrestlers come in, he takes care of them. And you might be saying to yourself, Colt, you don't need seafood. No, but I eat a fucking giant prime rib when put in front of me, and I'm happy to do it, and it was delicious. And then the dessert came, and I ate the dessert. And I was telling Alex Shelley, who I was sitting with, who was sitting next to me, I was like, I haven't had a cheat day in probably a month and a half. And that blew his mind. And I was like, when's the last time you cheated? He's like, I don't know, 5 days ago? And Alex Shelley is like, his body is like that of a babe. I don't know. I'm happy to say that in the most heterosexual way is I would love to have his abs or his stomach or whoever he is down there. And he was blown away by that. So I guess I've been doing good. I'm trying. I mean, you know, I have a lot of issues with my body and eating and doing a job where you need to be in spandex in order to make that living. And I made a decision a couple of years ago to lose a lot of weight and start eating right. And I've been doing it, but it had been a while and the food was so good. So I kind of went to town. Now back on a crazy journey of dieting and not eating for pleasure. It's hard out there. A lot of people equate doing stuff with eating. So I got to find other stuff to do that isn't eating. You know, I was planning on going on this giant rant about wrestling at Smash Wrestling in Ontario, an unbelievable federation who I've wanted to work for forever. Chris Hero and M-Dog had always told me how amazing it was. Finally, I got the opportunity and there was this one fan and I was just going to go off on just what a fan should and should not be. But I don't know. I think I'm going to dial it back. The people that were at the show, they know all about it. They know all about this fan. I won't hold this against Smash because other than that, it was amazing. But I will say this. Yes, if you buy a ticket, do whatever you want. Have a great time. But if you want to be a part of the show that bad and you want to ruin it for everyone because you want to be a part of the show, go get trained. Be a wrestler and be part of the show. Jay Lethal will train you down in Tampa, Florida. Kurt Hawkins and Pat Buck will train you in New Jersey and New York. Seth Rollins will train you in Iowa. Please don't ruin my matches. It was going to be such a fun match. It was a fun match. But you ruined it for everyone because you wanted the attention on you. Go get trained and be part of the show. The song of the week is so good. It's by this indie folk band out of California called Buffalo Buffalo. They emailed me a couple of great songs, and I'm going to play this one right now. You can buy their music at buffalotimes2.bandcamp.com. That's Buffalo X2. And if you got friends who write wrestling songs or you write wrestling songs, send them over my way, coltwrestling@gmail.com. Here's their song. It's called Dusty Roads. Enjoy it. We'll be back with Jeff Hardy.
Son of a plumber, American dream. You're what we want. The boys in the back are singing those hard times.
it's weird that your brother is doing this thing in like 2016 where like he's protecting it. I think we could talk about it in that way, right?
I think so, yeah.
Where we could do, like, he's not going to come on this podcast and be normal Matt Hardy.
Version one Matt Hardy.
Version
or
one, good,
or
yeah.
Whatever, you know, back in the day, right.
But it's just weird that, like, we're in this era where, like, that's not even a thing anymore. It's almost, not that it's laughed upon, but it's just like, if you were to protect it the way, I don't even know. I you wonder if, like, Nikita Koloff doing his thing now, how it would be looked at. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like a dude, what was he, like Sam Simpson, Scott Simpson from Minnesota.
Right, yeah. It's weird, man, because like some people do believe in staying in character, whatever you do, interviews or promoting, whatever. I mean, but to me, it's like I've got all kinds of characters, you know.
Yeah.
It would be hard for me to do a podcast as Willow or Itchweed. It would be extremely hard unless I really thought it out. But Matt's just so good at... He's like the master of improv these days with his character because he believes in it so much, which is great.
I feel he shouldn't do this. He shouldn't do this or anything.
Right, yeah.
As version one. He should hold on to it. I think it's a smart move, and it's probably not that it's like I think I would be afraid to do it. I don't know, you know, like I would be afraid to like almost commit so hard.
Yeah, because you have to commit, man, or like go all the way, and, you know. Other than that, I mean, like when we showed up at Ring of Honor, like I had this moment, you know, when the lights came on in Manhattan and he just goes, oh, and the people went crazy. And I was like, this guy is on to something magical.
And
it's
interesting you say he's a master in improv, too, is because I've taken some improv classes and stuff. And like what I gained most from it was commitment to the character. It's like what I took most away from improv. So just the idea that you said that those two in correlation, or the idea that you have to commit to it and improv together, I think says a lot. And I really do think an improv character. But I also think there's so much improv to just wrestling in general. I don't know how much you see that, but like part of the thing that I love about wrestling is the improv of it, which is weird because we're in this time and place of wrestling where it's a lot of like over-scripted.
Sure, yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
And I don't know how much you enjoy the idea of improv.
Some of the best things that happen, you know, come from improv. I mean, for sure, like things you would never expect just kind of naturally happen. Even, I guess it relates, but last weekend we were in Peru, Lima, Peru, wrestling Pentagon in Phoenix, and I did the poetry, and the ropes were kind of low, and I don't know if this is really not improv as far as the way you speak or whatever, but... Damn if I didn't hit my back and did the backflip to the floor and landed right on my feet, but it was so damn cool. I guess what I'm trying to say, it wasn't planned.
Yeah.
You know? And with talking, for example, at Bound for Glory last year, I was doing Itchweed debuted for TNA at the time. And I was so damn nervous because, you know, at times it's all been improv. I mean, but I knew I had to commit, but it turned out great. But like just like owning that character and... It would just be extremely hard for me to like see myself doing this as, you know, Itchweed, Willow, the Antichrist, Brother Nero, and feeling serious or believable in some way. But yeah, I don't know. But some of the coolest things that happen aren't really planned, and it's just the way it is.
Do you ever see the thing? I'm trying to get in my head what you so you. You took a backflip and landed on your feet? Explain how.
Yeah, I did the poetry in motion off Matt's back.
Oh,
but
gotcha.
The ropes were low, and I did it. The only other time I've ever done that in my whole career was against the Acolytes at some live event for WWF back in the day, and I did it to Ron Simmons, and I landed on my damn head, man. Like, I just went too high or something, landed on my head. Oh, my God. But this time, I landed right on my feet, and it was so smooth, and it just, I mean, it was, I was like, well, who is watching out for me right now? This is
Have
nuts.
You ever seen the clip of Hooventude doing that 450, 450ing onto the top rope and then landing on his feet?
Oh, no.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I haven't seen that.
He lands his butt on the top rope.
Oh, my gosh.
And then bounces and lands on his feet. And he's like, hey, I'm fine. And then he, like, you know, kicks the guy on the ground.
Wow.
Which is one of the crazy. It's just, I don't know, especially for you as a high flyer.
High flyer, yeah. I like that.
You know, you just hope that, like, you assume, like, well, if you fuck up a high-flying move, you're just getting fucked, right?
Right.
I mean,
yeah
something's going to hurt the next day or whatever
it is. Yeah. The last time I did a shooting star press was in
When was the first time you did a shooting star?
Oh, my God. I used to do it, man. Really good. This was back in the Omega days, like right around the time when we just first got a developmental deal or something. It was Manio, North Carolina, the Outer Banks in North Carolina. We would do the show every year, and we were out there rehearsing and practicing, and I was bad to, like, drift to the left or whatever, but I did it, and I messed my shins up, but I did it, went straight up, landed on the apron. Somehow, and like, Shannon Moore was there, Matt, Jason Arndt, Joey Abs, Marty Garner, a.k.a. Champagne.
You got one of those Kidman. You had one of those
exactly,
Kidman shooting stars.
He's done that before, too, right? Like, either got caught up on the ropes or something.
Yeah, but you know, like Seidel or Evan Bourne has that beautiful, like, up and float over.
Yeah, I drift. It's where
you
I
just kind of throw. At least Kidman would throw himself out, right?
Yeah. But I remember seeing him kind of, like, hit his legs on the ropes or something. But yeah, that was the last time. It was so, my heart was racing. I was like, oh, my God, what the hell just happened? But yeah, it's safe to say I don't do that anymore. Even the 450, I was talking to Phoenix at the show tonight, and he's not doing the 450 anymore because he kind of over-rotated and bummed his shoulder out. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason I stopped doing the 450, because I over-rotated and, like, jacked my shoulder up, thought I broke my collarbone or something. But yeah, those days are over, so I'll just stick with the Swanton.
Did you ever do those in WWF?
I did, yeah. I did a few 450s. Never did the Shooting Star, though. That was already retired. But yeah, I used to do the 450. You know, I did it on the ladder, one of the TLC matches, I think.
But never like a go right up 450 splash.
Not really. No. Okay. Yeah. I just did it from time to time. But that I think it was on Scotty Too Hottie when I kind of over rotated and jacked my shoulder up. But yeah, I used to do a sweet 450. But you know, again, those days are over.
You're not. I don't. In my head, you're not remembered as the 450 guy.
No, right? Not at all. Yeah. No.
I don't think you have to be.
No, I don't. I don't need that. I mean, it's kind of. A lot of people do the 450 these days, and the double flip is just insane.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I know it's cliche, but are you weirded out the idea of like, right, like a ricochet, like a double. What does he do? A double moonsault, and these guys doing 630s. Whereas like. So Omega was what, like 90, give me a year on that.
Yeah, 95, 96, 97, 98, something like that.
And you guys were kind of like some of those first of that generation, like really like changing the game, I'd like to think, right? With high flying,
for sure,
different stuff. Yep. And then now you just see like the ridiculous stuff that like a Will Ospreay will do.
It's nuts. I mean, it just blows my mind. And I always compare this to freestyle motocross. These guys are incredible. I mean, like when I saw Travis Pastrana, and this has been years ago now, he did the double backflip on a dirt bike. I was like, how is that possible? Mm. What do they do next? You know, what raises the bar? Now they're doing double front flips. At least one guy, I saw he got paralyzed. And damn, if he didn't come back on Nitro Circus, I forget his name. Gosh, I love him. But it's pretty much paralyzed from the waist down and did the first ever, paralyzed backflip. They were strapped into the dirt bike.
Really?
Yeah. And then you just go, man, what's next, man? The world's about to end or something. I mean, nothing else.
But the reality is in 20 years, the stuff that Ospreay and Ricochet or whatever are doing now is like going to be like, we'll laugh at it.
Right. Yeah. Right? You have to. Yeah, it's evolution, baby. I mean, it just, gosh.
It's the idea of like when Sabu was doing a moonsault and people were like, holy fuck, he's doing a moonsault, right?
Yeah.
And now it's like, well, we see moonsaults in the opening match.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And when he was doing that stuff, just like the homicidal deal, like breaking tables after you'd be frustrated after a match. I mean, that was some of the coolest shit I've ever seen. I was like, whoa, what is it? What am I watching? Yeah. This is so great. But man. Josh Sheenan, triple backflip at Travis Pastrana's property. If you haven't seen it, you got to see it. Just type in triple backflip dirt bike or whatever. And he did, I mean, he was like 100 feet in the air. He went straight up three backflips on a dirt bike and landed that shit. And I'm like, this is incredible. And when they interviewed him, at one of the X Games, he was like, I kind of never want to really do that again. Right. I'm sure. Cause I know what it's like to kind of have that rush as far as a huge jump. Never been able to flip a bike, but even when I broke my leg in April of 2015, there was three jumps I was terrified of, basically, and I started riding a lot. And the first two, I did one a month. The first one went great, had that good rush, and the second went great. Again, I had one more to conquer, and my own design, the track I built, it was a 100-foot triple, and I came up short, and for the first time in my life, I couldn't get up. I thought I broke both my legs. I was knocked out for a little bit, and my buddy was filming. Said, "Oh, you're gonna be all right." I said, "I don't think I am." Go 911. My wife comes out there. Okay, what do we do? What do we call Dixie? Call Dixie right now. And then we had just won the titles, man.
Put it on our credit card.
Yeah, we had just won the titles. Yeah, please. And I was the Omega heavyweight champion. But anyway, I mean, what an experience. Like, for the first time in my life, I was seriously injured and had to go through that whole recovery process. And it was rough, man.
What is it that, so you're still seeking some kind of adrenaline or rush? Is that what that is?
Oh, well, it's pretty much over now with my dirt bike after that, for sure.
But I mean, are you now going to like, hey, I've got to find a way to seek this? Is that like is that what's going in your mind?
Yeah, part of me wants to do that. I've thought about wearing my brace on my knee and trying to ride again, but it's just too risky.
But I'm saying if it's not bike riding.
Oh, and wrestling is always going to be alive, I mean, for sure.
Is it something else? Is it skydiving? I don't know if you know Justin Gabriel well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, my God, he showed me some videos.
Right.
Yeah, hanging on the edge of the plane or the wing and just letting go.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, he's incredible, man.
But I'm saying for you, I know there's a part of him that's just like, I don't know, he has to have that rush. And I'm like trying to relate to you. I weirdly went like bungee jumping for the first time. And I went to this like free fall place in Dallas and just those like.
Oh, right on. Yeah.
Have you ever heard of this place? It's called Zero Gravity in Dallas, Texas.
No.
It's like this really like, for lack of a better word, like a ghetto amusement park of like daredevil stuff. And there's like a free fall. It's like 120 feet. You just fall into a. Like a net, and there was this bungee jumping. I don't know. I looked awesome. I've never done anything like that before.
Gosh, wow.
Yeah, I'll give you a link afterwards.
Awesome.
If you're ever in Dallas. And I don't know. I'd never experienced like, or it'd been years since like that. Like, I guess it's just all adrenaline throughout your body, right?
It's got to be, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we did like three in a row. So just like, I don't know. Something I never felt, and I really liked it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's something like that. Is that something you've constantly been seeking or want to seek, doing the flips or doing the crazy wrestling?
Yeah, I think it's for sure. Yeah, I think that's exactly what I'm talking about. And I've always wanted to, scared, but before I leave this, planet, I would love to experience skydiving for sure. That's got to be the ultimate, rush, I would assume. But yeah, it's crazy. I bungee jumped and it was wild. I was terrified. But then, yeah, it's got to be the same feeling. I'm saying it's with dirt bike jumping. It's just like when you conquer the fear, it's just what makes it fun. So in a sick way, the fear is the fun.
So I want to know, like, you got into wrestling really young. And do you think, sometimes I wonder this about myself and I'm wondering about you too. Like, do you think like you're just been in wrestling long term? Because you just went hard at it at like 15 or whatever you guys went into it.
Right,
do you ever think
about
that?
Oh, for sure, yeah. I mean, I was, I think I first started doing county fairs at, 13, I believe. I think I was like a freshman in high school. 13. And then at 16, I was basically wrestling Razor Ramon, on WWF TV, going back to... I was the first one that had to go out of all of our group, and I was terrified. And that ring was the old stiff ring, that was terrible. You had to be them, 400 pounds to make it move. But anyway, and I thought I was on live TV. I was so fucked up in the head. I was like, what the hell's going on? It was just so rough, and I was like, man, I don't know if I ever want to do this again.
With Razor Ramon.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't want to do wrestling anymore.
Yeah, and my selling was just outrageous. And then I wrestled 1-2-3 Kid the next day, and it went really well. But, like, my headlock, if you go back and watch that match, was brutal. I was like, I wasn't locking, I was patting my hand. I don't know what I was doing, but it was ridiculous the way I had him in a hold. But it kind of refilled my soul and made me like, wow, this is all right, man. This is going to work out. And it's just, I think there is belief in natural talent. And I think I was kind of born with it.
But I mean, that turned into a, 25-year career now or something?
Yeah, 25
right.
years. Yeah.
And so like...
For sure, yeah.
Did you think like, well, I'll be in this for 25 years?
At that point, no. I really didn't know, yeah. And I've always been like, man, I think even back then I was like, man, I'm going to wrestle every match like it's my last. And I've kind of stuck with that mentality, hoping it pays off. And so far it has.
Have you been a long-term planner guy?
No, not really. Even after, I got two daughters now, and they're 6 and 1, and I still don't, I try not to hesitate or fear, the future or anything I'm going to do career-wise, and just try to, take it day by day, and just, and do the best I can.
It just blows my mind when people are like that. I'm so in my own head of like, what's the future going to be? What's, I don't know. I want to map out something that obviously you can't map out. Like,
right, right. Yeah.
Yeah, but I, for me, so it's hard to.
I think Matt's a lot like that too.
See, know? I think Matt and I relate a lot. Yeah,
yeah, for sure. As far as saving money or, you know, whatever. Yeah. So where I'm more of the laid back, carefree kind of guy. So, man, it's just, my new album's going to come out May or June, and we just finished it. I did my first gig in Clarksville, Tennessee. And I'd wrecked my voice the Friday before, did the match with Bram Saturday, and went straight to the bar and done like 11 songs, and my voice was gone. But I got through it, and it felt very it's exciting because it felt very natural, and it gave me a little hope about the future as far as like actually maybe making a career out of it. Because original music is tricky, man. It's very intimidating to throw something out there, especially when it's so, you know, whether dark or just very, you know, soul-driven. And hope that people like it. But yeah, man, it's up and down. It's like a roller coaster ride of emotion, and starts out with this very heartfelt spoken word thing and ends with a very dark spoken word thing with the idea of like, earth being hell, in the long run, to where like, if we already are in hell and we just don't know it, basically the earth burning and, who's ever left behind and doesn't deserve to move on, as Sandman would say, to the next dimension.
Okay.
Or heaven, as
not,
most
not the wrestler Sandman.
Oh no, they had the wrestler. Yeah. Okay. No, not the night Sandman, but yeah, he was going crazy about nine dimensions.
Oh really?
Today. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I was just listening, man. You know, but anyway, there is something I believe. I mean, when you talk about grains of sand and the amount of stars in the sky being equal, I mean, there's more. There's got to be. I'm not sure what that is, but I just have faith in the unknown. And but yeah, the new album is all about that, and it's anyway, I just wanted to plug that real
yeah,
quick.
Yeah, yeah, and we'll talk and we'll play a song beforehand too, if you want. Yeah. So you did a small show maybe?
Yeah.
Like how many people would you say were there?
Oh, about 300 probably.
Oh, that's amazing.
Packed. Yeah, it's bad.
Now my question is like, right, I'll do these small comedy shows, 100 people, whatever.
That's impressive, man.
And dude. Well, myself and Marty, my comedy partner or whatever, if I'm in Edinburgh with Brendan Burns, but right, like it's like nothing to wrestle in front for you probably 10,000, 20,000 people,
right?
But singing your music in front of 300, were you a little like
totally nervous? Yeah. I was terrified, man. And the fact that my voice was destroyed, because we sounded great in rehearsal, but I didn't realize I was pushing myself too hard. And I woke up that Saturday morning and I was like, oh my god, I can't talk, I've got laryngitis or something. And man, and with the fans before that show, like they knew something was wrong because I could barely hear myself, but they all knew and they came out and supported it either way. But like, I drank some vegetable oil. Somebody recommended olive oil. I was trying Halls hot tea.
You gotta go on YouTube and just type.
Yeah, all these remedies and
everyone's got a trick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I got through it, man. It was so fun. So I can't wait to do another one, man. We actually had an opportunity to do two dates on the Warped Tour.
Nice.
In the summer in Wilmington and like Charlotte, but man, I just couldn't commit because first of all, I lost my voice. So I wanted to see how the 18th went, and it went good, but man, then my voice was gone. It took like over a week to come back to where I could actually kind of sing again. So hopefully next summer, 2018, man, we'll be able to get on that thing, man. Because evidently there's some wrestling fans there, and they were like, oh, man, Jeff Hardy, oh, hell yeah, man.
Dude, I wrestled on the Warped Tour like in 2003.
Wow.
You know, like, there was always little wrestling people, you know, it's always kind of attracted wrestling.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully
they're there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
sure. I want to talk, like Italian Stallion. I want to talk to these guys.
Oh, right on.
Right. Yeah. That would book you guys out. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. The PWF, Pro Wrestling Federation or something. We called it Please Wrestle Free.
Please. Nice.
Yeah, because you know the old song, we've said this many times, but they would all. George South was there tonight, actually. Mm. George South and Stallion were kind of like a team back in the day, and they would take us, you know, to WWF, and we would be the job guys, the nobodies versus the superstars, and I kind of missed that about wrestling. That was a cool time.
Yes.
To see the guys, and like, cause you can, when you have that vibe for like spotting talent, it was very fun to say, wow, that guy's got something special about him. But anyway,
the idea of just bringing like 25 real shitty wrestlers.
Oh yeah, it's great. Oh man,
and maybe one of them gets a lottery pick, right?
Yeah, yeah, have little potential and get a chance. But man, they took like a booking fee of $100. We'd get $250 or something, and they would take $100. I forget what it was, but they would take something. We'd have to line up at the hotel room after the show and go in there and give them our booking fee. It was so shady, but I mean, if it wasn't for them, we would have never really got in. So, yeah. I mean, I appreciate it. We've seen them, you know, from time to time, and naturally, man, I just say thanks.
That's awesome. Yeah. So tell me how you like, I don't know, you. So you guys grew up in North Carolina, it's you and your brother, and I mean, I guess everyone kind of knows the story a little bit, but you know, I'd kind of like to hear through your story. Like, you guys just obsessed with wrestling as a kid, build your own ring. Is that kind of the whole thing?
Yeah, I think it was WrestleMania. Oh God, I want to say it was like a Trump. When they ran down the stairs, you remember that was like
the high stairs
was and
you're like,
four?
Is Ricky Steamboat gonna fall down with this kid?
Yeah,
you're worried about him.
Yeah, it was one of those. We saw that and we just kind of fell in love with it and said, man, this is really cool. And then like the following Christmas, I think our dad got us a trampoline for Christmas, and you know, our mom had already died and all that, and so we got a trampoline and we were like so excited, and then we said, man, we can make a wrestling ring out of this thing, man. It'd be called like the, let's say the TWF, Trampoline Wrestling Federation. We could do shows like every Sunday, invite all of our friends over. And that's when the whole first character-driven things between my brother, you know, Matt and myself were kind of born, because we were at like between 6 and 10 different characters, and we would like be basically the whole show. And then we'd have other friends would come over, and it just kind of evolved. We kept one, and we knew back then, like, okay, this Sunday was all right, but next Sunday's got to be better. It's got to be better, man. And we filmed it all with a big ass cereal box of a VHS camcorder, and we actually got like a few videos in the back in the days in the video rental stores, and like in the shadows.
Wait, hold on. What would you put those videos in the video?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you'd be like, oh, maybe someone will rent these?
Locally, yeah. Yeah, I think we had about 3 overall in the course of like 4 years or something like that.
And at what age?
Oh, my God. I was probably 9. Yeah,
okay.
9, 10.
So this rental store guy, they like, oh, this is adorable?
Just because we were local, yeah, basically.
Well, because you were local, or you were like adorable kids?
Maybe adorable.
Okay. Right?
Or local. Local. We were the local adorables. I think Tracy Cadell, which is Trevor Lee's father, which is Trevor Lee's awesome, so talented. But like his dad and Matt were kind of the promoters of the company, and they got him in the stores. One of the pay per view deals was called "In the Shadows of Controversy." And I remember, I think Tracy got it printed up, but when it came back, we didn't even realize it. But it was in the video stores, and it said "In the Shadows of Controversy." It was totally wrong, and it was a sweet picture of us just out there. Yeah, so yeah, we had like 3 VHSs in the local, and now those things are obsolete,
right?
Because Redbox and Netflix naturally rule the world these days. So yeah, but it was crazy, man. That was one of the first stages in our evolution, I guess.
Right, and so where does it come to the point where? Because, like, if you go to the WWF or whatever and they start booking you out, you have to be a professional wrestler, right? Or is it just, like, you had some spandex and someone knew and, like, they saw you just at local shows? I mean, I kind of break it through. It's like you start your own shows, and then where do you start mingling with, like, real wrestlers?
Oh, I think we had a tryout with Stallion. Matt and Joy with Jason Arndt, Joey Abs, you know, back in the day of the Mean Street Posse, had a tryout with the Italian Stallion in Charlotte. So they went out there and they did a match. They had no idea what they were doing, but they kind of, you know, did okay. And
so they like knew, they were like, oh, that's like, we know those guys, or they're in the PWI or.
Oh yeah. And it was huge. It was a huge deal, man. We got this tryout match with the PWF wrestling, man. And I forget, it was Eddie Rainwater. God, it was his name, and another guy. Gosh, he was in Omega, but it was through him, a connection. We got to meet Stallion and George South, to where, you know, Stallion needed some more guys to take up to job territory and somebody to be the nobodies, and so Matt and Jason had that tryout, and they went good. So okay, we'll take you. But then somehow, okay, we need about 3 more people, man. So then Marty Gonner comes in the picture. Shannon never really did the jobs with us. He went to WCW first, but then they asked about me, but I was 16. And, does he look 18? He could probably pass for it. So then I had to go do a tryout with Marty in, I think, King Mountain, North Carolina or something like that, or beyond Charlotte or somewhere. But I was doing the Willow deal, and I did Willow versus Sub-Zero at the time, I believe, which was Marty's deal. And, all right, you guys are good enough, man. We'll take you. And damn if we didn't go up there in a van. Chris Hamrick was there with us, man. The first time we met him, he was just great, hilarious. And we were just crowded in this van, and man, we went up to Pennsylvania or somewhere and did TVs.
So the tryout was for their promotion, but it was to see if you could do jobs.
Yeah, right, on WWF TV, yeah.
Were you doing a lot of independents?
No, we were just doing like the Omega stuff.
You're just doing the Omega stuff. Did you have like... almost a desire, like, did you know what that scene was around? Like, did you know what that scene was like around there?
Not really, no, but we kind of got an idea. Like, we went and did the shows, we were excited. It was like 200 people in the armory. I mean, it was pretty cool, man.
Which shows were these?
PWF, okay. Please Wrestle Free for Stallion, like the tryout deals. But then we kind of became regulars on his because he took us to the Fed, you know, mm-hmm. to the E. And gave us that chance, so we naturally kept working for him for free, so he'd keep continuing to take us back.
Also, then, did you think like, oh, they're a bit of a draw when they were on Shotgun
Saturday?
Oh yeah,
for Saturday, sure,
right?
yeah,
you were
sure,
a draw for
that. I remember seeing Stallion on like Gary Sabach, I might have that wrong, but on like NWA TV tapings or whatever, like as the job guy, you mm-hmm. know. And I remember saying, well, man, this is our chance, man. We're hitting something pretty big here.
You knew, like, you had seen him on TV, and you were like, that's a star.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
once you
Even
were able...
he was a job guy, we were like, man, this dude's been on TV.
Right.
Yeah. So
when you lose to Razor Ramon in 4 seconds...
Right, yeah, yeah.
You're like,
yeah.
well, I'm a TV star now.
I went back to school, man, that week. So, man, y'all better watch Raw this week, man. I'm going to be on TV.
Yeah, that's great. You were in high school on... Yeah. Did your high school status go up a little bit?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, I was... we got... Amateur wrestling my sophomore year. So I wrestled my sophomore year. Did really good, man. I was like third in the state or something the first year. And then the next year I was going to, but I was a junior then, and we'd started doing the WWF TV. And naturally, the athletic director got word of that. And he said, Jeff, let me talk to you for a minute. I had to go to his office. He said, are you getting money for doing these wrestling events? I said, yeah, oh, yeah, they pay us a little bit. And then the guys take a booking fee from us, you know. We just want the exposure. He said, well, you can't take money. You're a junior in high school. I mean, that'd be like you being a junior in high school and going to play for the NFL and then coming back and playing high school football. I was like, no, it wouldn't be like that. No, this is completely, it was for real. And he said, well, we can't let you. I mean,
your amateur status was revoked.
It was, yeah. And he said, we're going to have to do something about this. You got to choose one. If you want to be on the wrestling team and play baseball this year, then you got to quit this wrestling stuff if you're making money for it. Okay, I'll just keep wrestling, because I was at that point very passionate, you know, naturally, and just excited about what the future and the possibilities were. So
you continued pro wrestling.
I'll never forget. Oh yeah.
So you just dropped
my senior year. I didn't do nothing, man. I didn't do football. I didn't do wrestling or baseball. And I love baseball. Huh. Still, this is my favorite sport. I mean, other than motocross.
So you had, obviously you had this like group of friends and rest, like, right. That you guys were all from like the same school or neighborhood.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We all went to the same school. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so sure. like, hindsight or looking, if you're taking yourself out of it, like, were you guys like the weird wrestling kids, or were you, do you like know like what your class would be or what you guys were looked at from like other people?
I think
people
we were, because people used to laugh, man. Like, we would, I think we took some videos of the TWF to, well, Matt was a senior when I was a freshman, so maybe I did. And anyways, man, y'all got to watch what we did. It was, man, it was like, man, I can't believe y'all doing, man, that fake ass shit, man. That ain't, man, you ain't never going to make no money off of that. You know, that's a joke. You know, they were just like, man, you should focus more on football or baseball or real wrestling.
Right.
But yeah.
You're like, nah, I lost my amateur status. I'm a pro
right,
now.
Right, yeah. I'm a pro now, man. Hey, it'd be like me going to play for the Falcons, coming right. back and playing for the Vikings. Yeah. You know, Union Pines Vikings. But anyway,
where would you play? Is that like parties or like people's houses?
I think
it's
school. Yeah. Like,
oh, you take it to school.
Some of the guys, like, there was a few other students that would come over for those Sunday shows and kind of be in the crowd or whatever. Some of them probably got through in a match or whatever. And God, my dad made a, Me and my dad, I was a big skateboard fan back in the early Tony Hawk days and Christian Soy, all those dudes. I don't know if I said that name right, but and it was like a vert ramp, like a little one, but that was actually our entrance ramp. It was so crazy. It was like we had to walk down a vert ramp to get to the ring. It was so brutal.
Do you cringe at some of this stuff, or is it all...
No. I love it all, man. It's great, man. I have no regrets with that. It was just, it's a beautiful story when it all, it's all came together and it just continues to evolve. And you know, being this older now, it's just so cool to know that we're still very relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, with what Matt's doing, he can stay in character like for every interview, every promotional thing he does. And I mean, it's very cool it's hard to hold it together sometimes filming with him. Because, like, for example, we were at the Aloha Zoo in Cameron, like, with the kangaroos, you know.
Unbelievable.
It was unbelievable, man. Brother Nero, Smoking Joe, are you ready? And he locked up just like a human, man.
Yeah, what was he doing?
Their grip was so tight.
It looked so, like, it wouldn't hurt him. What was he, why?
Oh, my God. I don't know, but it was nuts. And, man, he kicked the shit out of me a couple of times. And then I said, okay, man, it's your turn. And the first time they aired it with the kangaroos, you can always go back and watch this. And I was in there, and this is the best story ever. And I was watching it, and you had the context in and everything. And I was like, okay. And man, he grabbed a hold of Matt, and I knew what that felt like because I went first.
Mm.
But then he balanced on that tail and started hitting him with a double super kick in the midsection. And Matt said, punish me, Joe. Punish me. Punish me. Man, you've seen me walk out of the frame because I lost it. I thought he was about to bite Matt's ear or either, like, take Matt down and like, really fuck him up.
Well, those kangaroos are known to fuck people
up.
They're
all muscle, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Muscle, man. It's nuts, man. But I donated $5,000. I just did my taxes before I came out here this past week, and I donated $5,000 to that because they live off donations. It's such a cool place, man. They let us come out there and do that. I mean,
right.
It's so cool, yeah. So God bless them, man, for doing that.
That's
letting us in there with a big ass kangaroo. That's pretty badass.
So somebody was like watching over. Was like, yeah, that's fine.
Oh, for sure.
The kangaroo handler was like, he'll be all right.
Yeah, and the other one's kind of little. You know, he's more laid back. He don't really get aggressive. And we never sparred with him. But he walked up one time, and I was like, well, let me think. Oh man, it's got to be somebody that's dead, right? Because your vessel contains their soul, or something like that. I was wrapping my head around it, and then he walked up one time, and I was like, easy, wait, stand back, easy, E. Just came to mind. Oh, my God. And we were out there with the llamas and the donkeys, the obsolete mules, and, oh, man, it's just crazy. That place, God bless the Aloha Zoo in Cameron, North Carolina. Man, I love that place.
Good plug.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay, I want to talk about some, and I only bring this up for positivity. Of the idea of, I don't know, you've been clean a while now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'd love to know, and I don't know how much you are comfortable talking about anything.
Oh, I'm very comfortable.
Yeah, good. Because I want to, like, as a wrestler, like, what drives the downfall, or maybe what drove it for you, or if you felt pressure because of wrestling or your body, or kind of how you get to a point where you start going down like that a little bit.
It was the schedule, definitely, with WWE, because I was, oh, man, you know, naturally, if you're on Raw back in, I don't know, I went back 06, 07, 08, 09, something like that, and, you know, if you're on Raw, you're basically gone Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, come home Tuesday, you got Wednesday and Thursday are your weekends, basically, do it all again, and you got the long tours, you know, the overseas tours, could last up to 2 weeks or whatever. But I think overall that just because I have all these other outlets as far as like when I see something I want to paint, I got to go get a canvas and do it. If I have this like song in my head, or like I got to record it. I got to like get a demo down or something. And motocross was huge for me too. And like building tracks because I love that shit so much. I never had time for that there. And oh my gosh, I think that just drove me over, especially with the opioid addiction with the Vicodin and the Somas, man, because it was just, it became something like bigger than me. And I was going, and I knew deep down that, man, I can't live my life like this. I can't depend on this pill like every day to get this feeling. And I knew better. And luckily for me, I never had withdrawals, man, I guess I'm a human anomaly, but and I never had withdrawals where Matt, when he went through his stuff, you know, I kind of witnessed that firsthand because I'd never been around withdrawal. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know if it was true. And, but luckily for me, I guess, I just knew I'd always eventually get more or something, but I never got sick from not taking a pill or doing any kind of drug. And so I'm very blessed and thankful for that. But yeah, overall, that was it. And after the arrest, the crazy story ever, left WWE in 2009. I stayed a few extra months because Undertaker wasn't ready to come back or something. Long story short, I basically left. 2 weeks later, I was arrested for too many pills. You know, it was crazy. Sitting in a jail cell going, what the fuck? Oh, my God, my life's over. It was, and I just got this song called, well, now it's known as Rebellious, from my guitar player in Cincinnati. And I broke down in tears with my wife listening to it because it just, it struck a chord. And I was like, oh, my God, I have fucked my life up. I have ruined my life. And this was naturally before my daughters and all that. Then the more time went on and the court cases kept getting, you know, delayed and pushed back, I was going, man, this might be all right. This might be all right, man. I just got to get shit together. And this was back when somas were still, they wasn't a controlled substance. So you could like order them from like a website. You could get them easy or whatever. And I was still taking the somas like during all that time before the actual conviction. And man, that's when 2011 with Sting, I was taking the somas and I went out there fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I couldn't even wrestle for the first time in my life. I went too far. I couldn't wrestle. And with my idol, basically, Sting, and he had to do the right thing and shut me down and pin me. But then watching that back was a...
You watched that back, huh?
Oh, yeah. I was terrified, but it was a huge epiphany.
Like, you knew you had to.
I had to, man. Right. Because I knew that shit would set me straight. And then actually going to meet with my lawyer, he basically said, hey, are you taking anything now? I said, No, I'm not taking anything now. He said, well, you can't take anything if you want a chance. You gotta finish this outpatient thing, 120 days, and it's gonna be great for you. And so I took that so serious. So yeah, that was my eye opener. I mean, for the rest of my life was that night with Sting. And man, I love him so much. He was so great after that, you know, coming back and being in the best shape of my life in 2012, whenever that was, when I won the title again or whatever. But yeah, basically, in a way, in a sick way, that was a, oh my God, that was a huge kind of eye opener for me to see that and to feel pitiful for myself, go out there and cut that promo when I came back saying I was pathetic, just being all down on myself like a Kurt Cobain type of hate for yourself, mm-hmm. You know. But then instead of taking the low road, which is like you ending your own life or being so, oh man, I can't believe I did, I can't live anymore, I just said, I have a chance. And I'm going to make the most of it. And that's what I did, man. And 2012 was one of my best years ever, just coming back from that damn tragedy of a story. And just so basically, yeah, just being on the road so much, I got carried away. No, and addiction got the best of me.
Well, and I was like, as it seems to me, and this is just a perspective, I don't know, like you guys were the wrestling nerds, which I can relate to, and I think a lot of people I don't know, were you guys like partiers in like high school or
no,
so much?
No.
Yeah, it seems like you guys were just kind of like really concentrated on your stuff.
Yeah, I was 21. I never drank a beer.
You never drank.
Yeah. But around 22, when I started getting crazy, man.
Mm-hmm.
It was nuts, man. Back when GHB was out there, if you remember that whole thing, mm-hmm. that now is known as the date rape. That was the first thing I ever did, and it was just like, once you do that, it's over.
And I'm not looking for any names or not anything, but it's just the idea of like, you're 21, you're on the road with them full time, WWF.
And then we were, yeah.
Yeah. And so you haven't drank. Like, is that first, it's just the boys being like, hey, be the boys, or
no, you know, with me, it's always strangers, man. Like I'm not that sociable of a person.
But I'm at the pressure of the locker room.
Oh yeah, no, none of that. No. I was Sandman was a lot. One thing we have in common is like, man, we kind of want to. Like he would be dressing like in his car in the boiler room or something, and I was like, dude, I kind of relate with you, mm-hmm. man. I'm not that. I don't want to go in there and tell stories. I kind of want to just do my own thing until I have to go out there and perform. And but yeah, it was just always with me. Like either I mean strangers, and then the shit would go on and, you know, stuff would come about, and it was nuts, man. And once you get to that point, you just really don't care. But like one thing I love about Lemmy from Motorhead, it really struck a chord again with me. He said, I've never done heroin, everything else he's done. But he said, that's what I've lived so long because, you know, I never did heroin. And that's one thing I was always, I kind of stuck to. I said, I'm never going to, no matter what, I'm never going to touch heroin. And so luckily, like, everything just worked out. And I did the hard stuff and then the pills and just, it all worked out. And I'm very blessed. And it was,
And with the Sting thing, too, it's kind of, it's cool to sit here and see, like, you guys are, like, back on top of wrestling. And,
it's the best, yeah.
That it's just... I don't know. Not that there's like so many. There's always these extra chances or whatever it is. It's just if I was a betting man, but like when that shit went down, I was like, well, you can't come back from that. Like,
right,
you
sure.
know.
Yeah,
and here,
a lot of people were like that. Yeah, sure, yeah, yeah. But I think that's the drive within me to where I know I'm like a. There's something special about me, and I'm the last person to ever be arrogant. But like, there's something going on with me that's very unique and. And I know that, but I just don't like, dwell on, I mean, I just don't, obsess with it and, or like,
you
know,
puff your chest out some too much. Right.
Right. Yeah. And so, but yeah, that deal with Sting, man, was the best thing, honestly, that could have ever happened to me to like straighten my ass up.
And then I also was curious about, cause I watched, I watched Punk like be on top and then like hate his life. And then you know, it's nothing I could experience, but I saw that firsthand. And then you hear the stories of like Brett also of just like being on top, but it's just like not good enough or just the idea of it. I don't know if you felt that too, of just like, it felt like going to work instead of like living in the bask of the glory of the dream, right? Like when you were wrestling Razor Ramon, you're like, one day if I could be the champion or I could be on top, and then the next day you are the champion on top. I don't know if you felt that way. Of just like, this fucking sucks.
No, I never. I've always known that I'm fortunate. And even the worst thing about like TV days, or as you know, I mean, you go there and you got to be there all day. That's the worst, man. But when you get out there in the ring, man, then everything changes. I mean, everything's forgotten. I'm out here to do what I'm great at doing. And that's the payoff for me, man. I will lose. Dude, losing don't bother me at all, man. People are so serious about themselves these days, man. It's crazy. This is pro wrestling. Anything's possible, and that's the beauty of this art form that we do. I mean, man, I'll lose every match for the rest of my life and still be so proud. I mean, it's crazy how people take themselves too seriously to go, I don't know, that's going to make me look weak, or I don't know, you might know how to do that, or I might know how to do that. It's just... It's crazy, man. I one of my new songs is called Enigmatic. Enigmatic, such a tough word to say, but it's basically about, God, I've been in WrestleMania, I don't know, 4 times, and if I ever go back, I want to defend my defeated streak, because I've been beat. I want to be beat every time until I retire, maybe win that year. But I mean, other than that, man, dude. I mean, you're in WrestleMania, man. It's the pinnacle. It's the top, man, and. Dude, I'll never like gripe over that or whatever, man. I love pro wrestling and I always will. But then what makes me interesting is the other things that I love, that kind of makes me more talked about or people like seek more interest in like what I'm all about, because, man, I just have these other interests and I take them just as seriously as I do my wrestling career. But the thing about the wrestling career is, it's my living, and I got 2 daughters, a family, and
that blew up.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah. So I mean, so it's a go-to, and I got to continue to be the best I can be in pro wrestling, and still fuel those other addictions.
There it is. And before we get out of here, just tell me what's the. I want to say like the craziest thing you've done, but like what has there been something that stands out? Just like, why did I do that? Wrestling wise, move wise, right? Even the match you guys did at the Hardy compound, when I think you took like a bump into the sand.
Oh yeah,
And there was even one in Ring of Honor where you took that bump off of the ladder into the table.
Right.
And Good Lord, what the fuck are you doing?
Right.
Have you had one where you're just like, maybe I should have done that, or like as you were about to do it, you're like, why am I doing this? Or this might suck.
Oh,
is there one that sticks out?
Oh, for sure. The final deletion is one for the history books, because it was like this 12-foot symbol I'd made, my Enigma symbol that I'm wearing around my neck, which is my favorite design ever. It's so abstract and cool. Anyway, like that thing wasn't easy to build, and even Kevin Owens, man, when he was doing the interview, which I love so much, I met him once, He seemed like an awesome dude.
Which is.
Yeah. And he was doing an interview, and he was talking about The Final Deletion, and which was so cool because it was so raw. I mean, four people and maybe one sound guy, dude, that was it. Mm. It was us, you know, that was it. And that's what makes it so cool because it's such a low budget. You know, we funded everything and worked our asses off for, you know, 2.5 nights or whatever. Because when I took that bump, the sun was coming up. It was like 5:36 in the morning, and I'd built a little platform on top of it. I said, you know, it's getting kind of old. It's been here about 3 years, and we can burn it. We can burn it. And man, that thing burnt all night, man. But I was like, it was really hard to build. But again, another like donation basically to TNA and just for the product, the art of it all. I said, yeah, man, it'll be great, man. We'll just burn it, man. You set that on fire. I take the big bump. And then we take it home, man. You own the Hardy name or whatever. But he said, I don't know if people realize. I mean, Jeff Hardy took a bump off of his symbol, which had to be at least like 12 foot tall on this mound of dirt. Who knows why it's there? Who cares why it's there? I mean, he went into the Lake of Reincarnation and came out as Willow. And dude, to me, I love that shit because in the broken universe, anything's possible. And the scary thing about that is, I mean, it makes sense somehow, you know, anything with a drone that happens and like, why does that, well, does that really make sense? Of course it does. It's broken. Anything can make sense. But yeah, that was, I missed my symbol. But I built a pet cemetery for Deleter Decay, which is actually where all my old dogs and, you know, pets are buried. My South African raccoon, my prairie dog, you know, it's a legit pet cemetery, and, rented backhoes to dig graves and built a $3,000 volcano. I mean, just for the love of the sport, right. The art form.
But that bump was the stupidest one you've taken?
Well, not really. No, I think that it was RVD, the stupid one, dumbest one ever, like, and the table exploded, but I wanted to go through a table vertical. And I remember having to clear it with Vince. He said, "Are you sure you can do that?" And I said, "Yeah," but man, it killed me, man. Like, I went straight through the metal framing or something, and it just, my back was jacked up for so long. It was nuts, man. But I was like, why'd I go through a vertical? Even one of the TLCs and TNA, I wanted to go through a table upside down for some reason. I thought I could do like a cannonball, but it looked brutal, man. I kind of just did a leg drop. Like, Bully was kind of over it, but I said, I don't know why. I just want to go through a table upside down. And
what do you mean upside down?
Oh, it was upside down. It was on the apron and the guardrail.
Oh.
And the legs were straight up.
Oh, no.
The middle of the legs. And Bully just moved. I went straight through, and oh, my God, I hit so hard. But I said, thank you guys for letting me do that, because it's out of my mind now.
Right. Yeah.
I won't think about that ever again.
Yeah. I definitely know I'll never do that again, right? Yeah.
For sure, man.
Amazing. Well, cool. Thanks for being on.
Oh,
this
man,
is it. We just did. Yeah, man.
Cool, man. Yeah.
You're an interesting dude.
Yeah, man.
And I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Where are you at on the internet and stuff?
The main thing is jeffhardybrand.com is where all my music's going to be coming through, and the new album, Procession of the Equinoxes, will be out around May, June. We just finished it, and so I can't wait for all the creatures, all the fans to hear this. It's very emotional and dark and happy and sad and all that good stuff.
That's exciting.
Cool, man. Yeah. And I look forward to doing more live shows for sure, man, because, you know, my body isn't getting any younger, so
Do you ever talk to, I don't know if you're friends with him, but I don't know, do you talk to Jericho about that stuff, like...
No, but I respect what he's done.
Because he's performing, you know, right?
He'll go tour, and then he'll come wrestle and go tour and take some time. He knows what he's doing.
He's figuring it out, isn't he?
Exactly.
Yeah. He's figured it out.
Yeah, man, and he's great, man. They did, oh my God, that cover song. What was it?
No, fuck if I know.
Not Hey You.
Hey Jude.
It was something, but it was very cool, and like I'd recognize it when he did it. But that's one thing we haven't worked on yet is cover songs, because I guess I'm such an original cat. I kind of don't want to go there, but in a way you kind of have to from time to time. So I kind of want to like focus on maybe Last Kiss by Pearl Jam. I think that might be a good one to knock out, because yeah, they covered it from whoever originally wrote it. But anyway, hopefully the future holds a lot of good things moving forward, especially with my voice. Even now, just singing the little obsolete line, because during that stuff, I was like, well, when I became broken and, you know, my brother owns the Hardy name, what if my music was just like from that song Obsolete? I'll fade away and classify myself as obsolete. I'll fade away and classify myself as obsolete. And now even like just doing it is so cool to hear. It's the closest I've came to like that feeling of like everybody knowing your song
mm-hmm.
and them singing it with you. I was like, man, that's because, you know, when you're at a concert, that's got to be the best. Right. Something you've created and wrote. And then the whole 13,000 people are singing it.
That's the beauty of wrestling. Like we can hide it and form it into, right? Or we can weasel it in.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Man.
I mean, I do, if this relates to in any way, but that's the way I think of comedy, of like I'm disguising comedy into wrestling. You know, like awesome, I'm getting those laughs, and in my head, like, oh, this is probably what like a stand up is like, you know, like at an arena telling a joke and getting a giant laugh.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm doing it in the context of professional wrestling, whereas the same thing, it's like, oh, we're wrestling, but I'm sneaking in what it would be like at a concert.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
How do you go about writing your material, or do you actually bring out a notepad and write down
jokes? I mean, I'm saying like for a comedy in wrestling?
No, like when you do stand-up. I mean,
well, I don't necessarily do stand-up. I do like the kind of variety and improv shows and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
it's not necessarily stand-up. It's just different kind of shows. But for when I integrate my comedy in wrestling, it's just like, I don't know. It's just, I guess it kind of goes full circle back to a lot of improv and stuff of just off the cuff or the idea of like, making a joke on the fly and getting a laugh and being like, oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I know RVD had done some stand-up gigs, and mm-hmm. I was like, damn, man, that's so... Dude, I respect you so much.
Right.
Man, that takes a lot of balls to get up there. And
I opened for Mick Foley a couple of times.
Wow.
Doing stand-up.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is nice because I'm... First of all, I'm over because I'm a wrestler on Mick's tour, you know, and he's drawing the house, so, like, it's no pressure on me. I'm just the opener.
Right, right, yeah.
So it was really easy... Easy gig. I enjoyed telling wrestling jokes for wrestling fans. And maybe that's, I don't know, maybe that's what it is with you guys. It's a couple of wrestlers on a tour with, right? Like
who
you
knows?
And Fozzy or whatever. And I don't know.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Maybe that'd be an easy way in.
I'm going to hit somebody up at Ring of Honor and say, man, could I play maybe a couple songs at one of your shows?
There you go.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, throw it out there and see if it sticks.
Yeah. Or maybe Sinclair Broadcasting can,
maybe they can help out a little bit.
They can set up a, like a, what was that? The unplugged, like a little studio and put it on their show. Put it on their, they can put it on their show or their TV. I mean, God knows they have enough TV stations or channels.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Hey, man. Throw us a bone. Let me sing on your
show. That's a good old metaphor.
Yeah. Let me sing on your shows.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Awesome. Thanks, bud.
You got it, man.
All right, I love the idea of an open, easy conversation. These things are able to be talked about because we're just hanging out. It's very comfortable. It's a very relaxed situation, and it's very nice of him to do that. So if I remember, I'll plug his music when it comes out in a little bit. I'm sure he's got a bigger machine that will help do that, the company that he's now working for. But I appreciate you coming on, and I appreciate you, the listener, listening to some of these plugs and...
Upcoming events!
All right, the best way that you could support, cultmerch.com, digitalcult.com. That's where you can buy the Wrestling Road Diaries 3, Fun Equals Money, a wrestling documentary about life on the road. Twitter and Instagram, @ColtCabana, Facebook/AOW Podcast, also/ColtCabana. My storytelling podcast, Pro Wrestling Fringe, plus past archives of the show are ad-free, and they're on howl.fm/Colt. Use the code Colt, get yourself a free month, and you should sign up now because April 17th up through episode 300 will be taken off the podcast feed, so download them. If you don't, that's fine. They'll be on the Howl app ready for you to listen to. ColtWrestling@gmail.com is my very public email. Maybe your promoter will put me on your upcoming show or convention. I got a YouTube channel. ColtCabana.com is my website. I got a P.O. box there. You can send me stuff. Main Event Belts just made me this awesome belt. And you can buy a Colt Cabana belt too, ranging from $300 to $800, I think. That's also where you can buy a Super Kick belt too. Justin Roberts sent me his book. Bless his heart. And all this stuff about JBL has came out. And Justin is just telling his story. I'm in it. I haven't read it. It's hard for me to read. He was on this podcast, and he was great. We ran into each other very early in our wrestling careers, and I think it's so cool that he has this book. And it's very professionally done. I was also sent a book called Teeny, Pro Wrestling's Grand Dame, which is a story of Jerry Jarrett's mom, or Jeff Jarrett's grandma, and her involvement in the wrestling industry. And if you listen to Jeff Jarrett pitching Global Force, he would always say he's a third-generation promoter. That means his grandma is full of stories, and this book is full of her stories. Teeny-book.com. And the band Buffalo Buffalo sent me a t-shirt, although it was one size too big. Will you guys send me an extra large, please? I'll send the 2X back. I'm sorry. All right, upcoming. Friday, April 14th, Mesa, Arizona, partyhardwrestling.com. Thursday, April 20th, Cape Breton, Canada, Facebook/ACWA Wrestling. Saturday, April 22nd, Cape Girardeau, Missouri, capewrestling.com. I'll also be at Cape Con that day. Friday, April 28th, Saturday, April 29th, Milwaukee, Minnesota, ROHWrestling.com. Sunday, April 30th, Austin, Texas, WrestleCircus.com. Friday, May 5th, Clive, Iowa, ProWrestlingRevolver.com. Saturday, May 6th, Chicago, Illinois, a free podcast taping at Brick-A-Brack Records in Logan Square. And that night at the Logan Auditorium, AAWrestling.com. Sunday, May 7th and Wednesday, May 10th, Toronto and Detroit, respectively, ROHWrestling.com. Saturday, May 13th, Westbrook, Maine, LimitlessWrestling.com. Friday, May 19th, Lakewood, Ohio, OldWrestling.com with an E. Saturday, May 20th, Rahway, New Jersey, WrestlePROOnline.com. That is the show for this week. Huge thank you to you guys at home. I appreciate you listening. Tell a friend. Let them know that you dig the show. Thanks to Jeff Hardy for coming on the show. Cable Guy Jeff and Stu Stone. Kid Russell, Matt Jenkins on the music. Dane Miller with some tech. Sponsors, highspots.com. Hundreds of full-length titles available to download. A POD service. That's amazing. That's how you can watch PWG, AMA knee pads, gear, mask, wrestling ring. OneHourTees.com. They help run ProWrestlingCrate.com. They help run ProWrestlingTees.com. That's where you can support your favorite independent wrestler directly. TweakedAudio.com/Colt. The earbuds that I use get over 30% off for free shipping just because you listen to this show. And that's the show for this week. That's what we do here, folks. We talk to wrestlers. We hear their stories. Some of them make millions of dollars. Some of them don't. That's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of being an artiste. That United thing, huh? I mean, next week I'm going to be a million miler on United. Watching that video just made me so sick. It was gross. It was gross. There's always something, though. The world's a fucked up place. There's always someone doing something bad. But on the flip side, there's people doing good things, right? How about we get a story about something good, and it blows up as big as this one? Ooh, that was hard to watch, though. And I'll be flying it next week, the week after, the week after, the week after. I mean, no one's fucking with me. I guess that's one of the privileges of being a bigger dude. But they shouldn't fuck with anybody. I'm boycotting you for 3 days, United. And then I'll be taking a flight to Arizona. All right, this has been The Art of Wrestling. For Colt Cabana, I'm Colt Cabana. Thanks.